Hey there, conductors. If you've ever felt that you're not quite sure what to do next when you're studying a score, maybe you don't even know where to start with a difficult piece, maybe you study one piece too much and then you realize at the first rehearsal that you don't know another one well enough, or maybe you're a new conductor and you don't know what score study is, I'm excited to share that I'm finally publishing and sharing my score study checklist. I've been refining this for 12 years now, and I'm so excited to share it. It is going to walk you through my structure, my process to make sure that I learn every score that I need to learn well enough and so that nothing falls through the cracks. So it covers everything that you need to know. There's a link in the show notes. Go ahead and click it, sign up, and you'll get that score study checklist sent right to your email. You'll also get access to an 8-minute video of me explaining what each section is and how I use it to organize all the music that I need to learn. It's only 8 minutes, so it's not going to take you a whole hour to learn how to study better, how to put up a process for your score study, and how to make sure that nothing is falling through the cracks. So again, click the link in the show notes, and I hope to see you soon. Now, please enjoy this episode of Podium Time. Welcome to Podium Time, the podcast for conductors and students.
We're looking for, obviously, for me, number one is, can you conduct? We don't usually get finished products, and we don't want to only have finished products. I want to see talents. I want to see potential. We don't necessarily look for people who have it all, but we are definitely looking at people who know how to engage. We can't make a person from scratch, but we can take a person, an unfinished product, and make it very polished, ready for the professional world.
Hi there, and welcome to Podium Time. This is your host, Jeremy D. Cuevas, and today I'm so excited to share this interview with Mayan Chen, music director of Chicago Sinfonietta. Now, you probably noticed that back in February, we recorded our 100th episode as a live stream extravaganza, and one of the things we were doing with that was raising money for the Chicago Sinfonietta's Project Inclusion Conducting Fellowship. So we got Mayan on the phone to talk about that, but we ended up talking for a full, hour and 15 minutes to record a full interview, and I didn't want to only show part of that at the live stream, so we cut it down for the live stream, and now we've got that full interview here for you. One of the things she does through Project Inclusion is she works with these young conductors and these emerging conductors and helps prepare them for professional jobs. So that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about today, plus some great lessons from her teachers and some incredible programs and diverse, especially female composers. Be sure to head over to chicagosinfonietta.org to check out Project Inclusion and chicagosinfonietta.org/donate to make a contribution. Please help continue to support this fantastic program. We've had a couple conductors come through Podium Time that have gone through that fellowship. And now, without further ado, please enjoy this interview with Mayan Chen. So which hall is that behind you?
That's from my hometown, which is actually in Kaohsiung. People know Taipei better, but now my hometown has the largest arts complex in the world since November 2018. So I'm proud to always say, this is my hometown. It was the largest arts complex in the world, having four venues, based out of an old military base. So this is pretty exciting until the pandemic pretty much prevented all the foreign groups coming to Taiwan. But Berlin Phil, Vienna Phil, they have already been there. Everybody is trying to, it's one of the best halls in Asia. It has the, as you can see, the vineyard design of Disney Hall. Mm-hmm. But I think the acoustic is even better than the Disney. Just between us. So it's amazing to be there.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous hall. Have you conducted there?
Yes, many times now. Yeah. And believe it or not, Taiwan's concert life has resumed almost, I would say 90%. I mean, other than foreign artists probably have a hard time coming to Taiwan with the 21-day quarantine.
Yeah.
But hey, things are happening. Concert life is resuming. Audiences are back. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome news. We just recorded a concert on Wednesday. We still showed it digitally, but it was nice to get back into the hall for a couple hours.
Yeah, that's right.
Perfect. And so you live in Chicago, is that right?
I'm based in Chicago.
Based in Chicago.
I wouldn't want to say live. I'm on the road so much.
Yeah.
But even the pandemic, I was able to make it into Austria to do a couple filming.
Okay.
I'm principal guest with the Stiliates Recreation Orchestra Graz. And so, yeah, so I guess conduct about 22 orchestras a year on average besides my Chicago Sinfonietta duties. And so I'm on the road a lot.
Yeah. It's maybe it's a good problem to have at least.
Yes, and the pandemic definitely has made it complicated, but you know, we'll see. We'll see if, I mean, most of my European engagements are still going ahead in the spring. We'll see what happens then.
Yeah, well, it's awesome that you're getting to perform and you're getting to do stuff. You know, is Chicago Sinfonietta doing anything right now? I know it's really tough for American orchestras.
We have postponed our MLK program until March. You know, it's just, I think everybody feels safer because this is just a tricky time. I mean, we have to be protective of our musicians,
absolutely,
you know, in terms of their comfort, their safety concern. And so we're doing, you know, a lot of things virtually, you know, pulling past footage, but also recording just, you know, something new in terms of just more individually than, you know, ensemble wise.
Yeah, yeah.
Until March.
Mm-hmm. And so you're music director of Chicago Sinfonietta. How long have you been there?
Since 2011, I think, yes.
Yeah. And did I read that you're only the second music director?
That's correct. Yeah, wow. Because Maestro Paul Freeman founded Chicago Sinfonietta in 1987. And so it's.
Fantastic.
Also, have we started? We have started.
Yeah, just kind of.
Okay, yes.
But
so
yeah.
Maestro Paul Freeman founded Chicago Sinfonietta in 1987 after his chance encounter with Dr. King at Atlanta Airport. Maestro Freeman was there to conduct Atlanta Symphony, and he was actually the first African-American conductor to do so. And so he was so inspired from his meeting with Dr. King. He met him earlier, and Dr. King remembered him. And that second encounter really inspired Maestro Freeman to found the most diverse orchestra in the country, and he thought the best city to do it was in Chicago.
Yeah, and I've heard a great diversity of programming as well, and we can definitely come back to programming. But and then he founded the Project Inclusion Project just a couple of years before you got there. Is that right?
That's right. He started with the instrumentalist, and when I came in, I thought, why not expand it to include conductors? And so from 2013, we started to launch the conducting portion of it. And, you know, you have interview Roderick Cox, and he was one of our first conducting fellow that we experimenting including, and he has had great success.
Yeah.
And Samir Patel, who was with San Diego Symphony and is now at various posts, and also Roger Kalia. We're so proud of these, you know, first class fellows really going places. But not only them, we have graduated I would say close to 10 young conductors of diverse background in professional positions. And it's really exciting for us to see that these conductors of color making their ways into professional career, professional conducting field, both in America and in Europe as well.
Absolutely. And do the fellows, do they live in Chicago? Do they come in a couple weeks? How does that work?
It depends. If they happen to be local, I mean, we of course basically review the footage, not necessarily based off their locality. And so we just basically look at where they are career-wise. For example, we have a current fellow who is a student at Northwestern. He just happened to be in town. He also came out of the orchestra as an instrumentalist. And so he happened to be in town. Doesn't mean that, we only choose our fellows in town. And we have had, for example, I mean, Roderick was really, I think he was all over. This was before he landed the Minnesota assistantship. So he was out of town. Samir Patel also, Roger Kalia also. So we basically take people where they are. If they happen to be out of town, we fly them in for a
Wow.
couple of weeks per season to really go through our intensive sequences, which includes, a lot more what people don't get as music school. So, for example, we worked on personal narratives, basically, preparing you for an elevator speech ranging from 2 minutes to 20 minutes,
Okay.
sitting down with board members, potentially in a music director search or a guest conductor search for later in their lives. And not only that, we include, for example, marketing, programming for various duties. One of the things I started as a young conductor is I don't know how to program for YPCs. I don't even know what YPCs were. Young People's Concert,
Yeah.
Family Series, Park Series. I mean, all these incredibly important community programs. I had to learn sort of, crash and burn
Yeah.
from having the real position. And so it's really interesting in terms of we try to give these young conductors, equip them with skills that we believe they will need to succeed in their first professional position. And so it's very extensive. It's really understanding all aspects of a professional orchestra, from fundraising, from working with board, understanding who is artistic administrators at various orchestras, just everything you can think of. And this year, being the pandemic, we have given them video projects to focus on that they could really put on their website to have an important presence online, as many people have to really go through things online these days.
I think that's great that they're getting that mentorship and that learning for all those things, 'cause you're right. I think most people do just crash and burn when they get their first job, but then also you can only learn it on the job, and sometimes it's hard to get a job without that experience, not just conducting experience, but everything else.
Yeah. So I try to give them what I know from being three assistant positions on my own journey to really, pass the baton, so to speak, and also I've learned so much from my many mentors, assisting Robert Spano and Donald Ronicles from Atlanta Symphony, and my wonderful mentor with the Taki Fellowship, Marin Alsup, really knowing the challenges specifically for women conductors, for example, and to overcome that. And it's really just passing what we know to help the next generation of young conductors.
Absolutely. So what is the conductor part of the fellowship look like? Is there much like actual podium time or actual and conductor training?
Yes, so we try to give our fellows and our auditors what we call quality podium time in terms of that we may be on a regular basis, each time they come in, they will have podium time with our string quartet, made up of repertoire that's really preparing them for auditions, upcoming auditions for assistantship. And when we have created assistantship after the fellowship to really lengthen the time they can have with our organization and with me. And so when they are in the assistant position, we try to give them real podium time with Chicago Sinfonietta. That's permissioned from the musicians to be taped so they could really submit the video at important venues like Symphony Center. We perform at the home of the Chicago Symphony. And so it's a really big deal for a young conductor being able to have quality video that they can submit when applying for jobs and workshops and competitions down the road.
And sometimes it's hard to get that quality video recorded.
Absolutely. You are absolutely right. You know, to have the quality sound combined with the video, that's a big challenge for many young conductors already. You know, you don't want to submit a video and that's, you know, the brass, you know, sort of blasting out the whole thing and you can't quite hear the whole balance, or you hear someone, you know, the back of the orchestra is not necessarily the best sound representing the collective sound. And so for us to really be able to culminating at a graduation sort of opportunity is what we love to be able to give to our fellows. Not all of them get to have this graduation opportunity just because we have so few programs in a season, but you know, the ones that do get it will benefit so much.
Absolutely. And so I forgot to mention, today we're raising money for the conducting specific Persian. Project Inclusion has a lot of other sections, but since this is a conducting podcast, we're focusing on the conducting one. Who should apply for this fellowship?
I think this program is ideally suited for those who have gotten really great training at music school or conservatories, whether that is, you know, finishing a graduate degree. I would think that is actually probably more competitive just because we have had larger pool of applicants. Definitely if people are only graduating from undergrad, I mean, we will probably consider those candidates as auditors, because it takes a little while to really catch up to the curriculum, the intensive curriculum that we have designed. And so people who are really ready for having a professional career. That's who we are built for. And that's the incredible success we have had in terms of really helping the person who is lacking opportunities to be ready for opportunities coming their way. We can't guarantee opportunities because, you know, a lot of the auditions come from professional orchestras, and they have their own reviewing process. So we can only pitch our best in terms of, hey, you got to be looking at, you know, these guys. And people do approach us in terms of recommending conductors. And so we try to do the matchmaking as much as we can. But I think people who are ready for the professional step and finding themselves really hard to break into the field, yet they have gotten all the trainings and experiences there is to get, we're perfect for you. And so I will say, you know, for people who are struggling young conductors, I was one for many years, we are the perfect stepping stone for helping you to usher you into the real world of professional conducting.
Perfect. And what are some of the things you're looking for specifically for those applicants?
We're looking for, obviously, you know, for me, number one is, can you conduct? My first process, when I look at all the applicants, I don't look at their names. I don't look at their materials. Mm-hmm. I just look at their videos, period. That's all I base on. And I will try to see, we don't usually get finished products, and we don't want to only have finished products. I want to see talents. I want to see potential. Mm-hmm. Now, not to say that's the only part, because my counterpart at the Sinfonietta, they look at more of the full package, meaning, can you really have a vision for yourself? Can you engage when you speak about, I mean, we do ask people to submit a video where they speak about themselves. And so we're really looking at people who have an idea about who they want to be. Not to say that we're the program that actually designed to help you fine-tune who you want to be and your artistic vision. And so we don't necessarily look for people who have it all, but we are definitely looking at people who know how to engage even through the videos. Because if the person doesn't come off engaging or fun, then, you know, it's a long way. We can't make a person from scratch, if you know what I mean. But we can take a person, an unfinished product, and make it very polished, ready for the professional world. And so it's really sort of abstract. You got to come with goods. That's all I'm saying. You got to come with talent and your vision, your passion. Maybe that's the word. Mm-hmm. And then if you win us over, then we know how to help you, because we have very limited resources. You know, we're very small, but a mighty small ensemble that's very visible for the field in the country. And so, you know, we don't have gigantic, you know, resources. So we have to be very picky about who we choose, because at certain level, it's going to be very personal. Mm-hmm. When it gets close to audition times, it's basically me getting on the phone with the fellows one-on-one for couple sessions to really get that person ready for everything I could give that person ready in terms of these very specific things that people look for in an audition. You know, for example, I'll just, you know, since a lot of conductors are tuning in, I may have to copyright this phrase, but, you know, I was wondering why all the young conductors have trouble with how to speak in an audition setting, in a professional orchestra setting, period. Mm-hmm. And so I developed the phrase rehearsal language. That's basically, if you have to imagine yourself as English as a second language, like I was, basically few words to the point. That's how you speak to a professional orchestra. They are not looking for someone who is flowery with the words. They turn off right away because they're not there to hear your lecture. I mean, they probably have played the pieces more than you have ever conducted. in terms of a lot of young conductors conducting in the audition setting. And so we have to practice over and over how to master that. What you know, it's what I call the pyramid. You're hearing, for example, my first time conducting Oregon Symphony as a young conductor, trying to win the assistant audition. And, you know, they sounded already like a recording. What do you say? What do you think to say? And if, you know, Atlanta Symphony, for example, Robert Spano spoke to us before the auditions. There were, I think, 6 candidates. And he basically specifically asked us to pace our auditions to cover the repertoire that's needed to be covered. And he wanted to see how we use our time. And so I think it's super important in terms of if you were to stop and say one thing to this, you know, 15 minutes that makes or break your career. And this is a, you know, Atlanta Symphony, I grew up with their professional recordings. What do you say? I mean, this is very interesting experience, and almost you're not taught at school how to overcome many challenges and anxieties you feel at professional auditions, because you're both swords, both sides of a sword, meaning the orchestra is picking a young talent. They know that. But at the same time, they're looking for inspiration from the podium. So if you are on the podium with a professional orchestra for the first time, you have to disguise your fear and your trembling, and you cannot let any blood to be seen. Otherwise, the orchestras will be like wolves over you. You know, it sounds terrible, but that's actually how it goes. And so you have to have such confidence from the preparation that you know how to handle such a great instrument without putting yourself, without minimizing your leadership. And so it's a very, I think that's probably the hardest thing for us to help the young conductors is how do we help each one develop such confidence and experience, even though they haven't had such experience. And yet you have to bring that with you in order to win the audition. And so that I think was what I feel the most proud of, that we were able to do with each one going through our program.
Yeah, conducting's hard.
Well, and conducting professional orchestras is extremely difficult in terms of psychological game. I mean, it's not just about the physical, but there's also the psychological part. That is also a huge part of winning an audition.
So it sounds like that confidence, I mean, comes from thorough knowledge of the score and you know, really knowing what you're going to do. And then just being professional in the rehearsal. You mentioned using, you know, very simple words, keeping everything short and sweet, being really effective with your time. And so it sounds like just, you know, be prepared and then be effective with your time. And unfortunately, the confidence is another step. But yeah.
Well, let me add to the hard part. It sounds simple, but it really isn't, because I think when people think about prepare, so, you know, for those young conductors out there, and you also mentioned the Malco competition that I have won, and I'm going to serve as a jury member. So here is another one. Do you know your score well enough? So in that 15 minutes of competition, auditions, situation, that you can stop and immediately know the measure number or 8 before letter A, in terms of that's the spot you're going to next without like, okay, I have to look for it. I mean, when you have 15 minutes to impress, you almost have to memorize everything in terms of, I know exactly where I'm going to. I'm not going to waste any second of doing a logistical thing, because every second you can should be about making art. And so another complication about, it sounds simple, being prepared, saying few words, but one of the hardest thing I cannot really teach over here, over a video, is the ability to listen. Listen to what the group is giving you. And I can tell you, I have done Scheherazade with the Chicago Symphony subscription, all over in Europe, in Taiwan, and the latest with my orchestra in Graz. And I can tell you, yes, the ballpark of my interpretations stays pretty much the same in terms of tempo, pacing, transitions. But I can tell you every one of them is a different recording because of the orchestra that you're working with. They come with their own personality, their own preference to tempo, I mean, especially the concertmaster solo, it just will be different. And so the ability to be not nervous about, I got to have the tempo I want to have. The ability to be able to hear and say, interesting, how can I mold this into what I think will be best between me and the group? And so it takes a lot of chamber music ability, and that only comes from making music with others, literally in a chamber music setting.
Yeah.
Now, also, another tricky part is, so I'm just going to go into different directions.
Yeah.
Being prepared for some of the young conductors out there, well, this might be shocking to you that sometimes you show up and your edition is different from what the orchestra is using. And then you find yourself, you can't stop because where is letter A? They don't have a letter A. They have one. And so the preparation, I would totally recommend finding a way to contact the librarian. The librarian network is so close. Please don't burn any bridge if you can help it, because it will be broadcasted the next day. And so keep a perfect record of the librarian and be nice about asking, you know, I asked for a PDF of the first violin part. You may not need the whole string parts unless you really want to. That's an extra step for people. But having the first violin can inform you so much about the bowings the concertmaster has done. You can definitely check the rehearsal numbers, letters, measure numbers, in case there's any addition differences. And that's a very important step about not making yourself look like a fool at that first rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Couple things I think different from this is watching other people's work. Now you have a lot of YouTubes available to you. If you can sit in, well, now it's the COVID time. Unfortunately, it's not possible. If you can sit in people's rehearsals, you know, majority of assistance time is also sitting in, being a cover for a guest conductor or the music director. And people think those times are boring. But I spent 5 years covering for 3 orchestras, and I found myself very occupied. Even though I was sitting in the hall just listening for balance, I am always ready for the next balance spot. If Mr. Spano turns around and says, "Man, any balance issue, boom, I can be ready to say, letter B, what wins? Maybe softer or something like that." Because you want to be engaging yourself in terms of, yes, I'm sitting in the hall, but any moment you could be called onto the podium, things could happen on stage. Who knows what, right? And so here's an example. Mr. Spano and Atlanta Symphony was doing, I think, a Brahms piano concerto with Brahman. And I've always, just be very looking out to what's happening on stage. And even when the piece has started and I saw Robert turn around, and I don't know what was happening, whether he needs something from off stage, it just looked unusual. Yeah. So I didn't know what was happening. I ran backstage immediately, and the stage manager happened to be, I think, watching football since, you know, things have started. And I got his attention, and I said, "Can you please come on stage? I don't know what's happening." Well, it turned out the piano's wheels were not locked properly. Uh-oh. And so the piano kept moving, and then I think the soloist was trying to signal to Robert, the conductor, I can't keep playing because, you know, it's just running away from me. And so, you know, so my point is, as an assistant, you have to be so alert for any important things happening, and always be prepared because things might happen, and then you might end up taking over the podium. And so not only knowing your music well, but knowing I have notes from almost everyone I have covered in terms of in that score, what they rehearsed, what they went to address issues. And, you know, when I was in Portland, having the dual hat of being assistant to Oregon Symphony, music director of Portland Youth Philharmonic, I realized the piece comes with similar problems. It's just a matter of degrees. With youth orchestra, magnify, you know, yeah. The transition is going to be messy. But I realized with professional orchestra, well, the problematic places are similar. They're just the degree, maybe smaller, but the problem, you know, every score comes with its own challenge and they're similar. And so I would encourage all the young conductors out there, please don't ever feel like you know everything. I still feel like there are things I don't know about Scheherazade every time I do it. I'm like, why didn't I think of that last time? And so I will say, listen to all recordings. Bad recordings is also very informative. What was bad about it and what was the problematic place that is very apparent on the recording and they didn't have time to fix. That was very interesting. And so I will say we have all the tools available to us. And so, you know, being prepared as a young conductor, it's not easy because it encompasses so much that you need to be ready for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I in rehearsals, I'm always taking as many notes as I can. Like, I'm like, oh, if I stop, am I missing something? Like, I try to always be busy and, you know, yeah, absolutely focusing on the sections that get rehearsed and the sections that don't, because sometimes it's not what you expect. But I love that. Just always be prepared because, yeah, at any moment they could turn around. And and the more prepared we are, the more we can actually help. You know, I think we feel so helpless as assistants all the time. We don't get to do anything, but we really can if we take notes and we send notes and we help with those things.
And I will also encourage people, if you have the chance to sit in rehearsals, to listen to what needs to be done that has to be spoken about.
Yeah.
Or things that will naturally fix itself without you touching it. And so this is another sort of comes with experience. And a very common mistake I think a young conductor does is you hear something, you stop immediately and you try to demand it versus, okay, maybe take this passage one more time, but you do have to say something. I mean, if you don't say something, then the orchestra thing you can't hear. So it's a balance of giving them a musical direction and letting things sort of find itself to be fixed. And this, you know, it's a hard one to discern. Mm-hmm. Now, another thing I will encourage all the conductors listening, I will assume more American conductors listening than European conductors, because now I work in both continents. It's a huge difference in terms of rehearsal expectation. In America, things are need to be efficient because it's very cut and dry, and do not ever go over 1 second because that will not go down well for, again, the personnel manager's zero talk, which young conductor went over time without, you know, without realizing it. And so another really important thing I will encourage American young conductors to do: when you stop, it's easy to fix the obvious, the technical, longer, shorter, louder, softer. But please don't forget why we're there. We're there for the music. This is what European conductors do more, is they focus on the music and then use the technique to support it. And so I always train my our fellows. When you have 8 words, I try to limit their one sentence to 8 or 10 words, because in an audition setting, really, that's all they have the tolerance for. How do you get in musical? Well, obviously you have to say where it is, who is involved. Those are given, right? Then what you really need to cover is musical intent followed by a technical help.
Okay.
All that in 10 words. And it takes quite a bit of practice. It's really not second nature.
Mm-hmm. It's easier to just keep talking and keep talking.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Well, there will be a moment, for example, if you are auditioning for an assistant that has, for example, a youth orchestra attached to that job. Well, then you rehearse differently with the youth orchestra. Mm-hmm. With the youth orchestra, you're more of a teacher. And yes, I still think the efficient way of rehearsing applies. However, you do have to give a little bit more soul and spirit to the piece for the youngsters. You know, it's the cut and dry doesn't necessarily go far. You have to create at least one magical moment. As my conducting father, Mr. Ken Kiesler at University of Michigan, has taught me, you have to create at least one magical moment in a youth orchestra rehearsal setting. Yeah. And that moment could be, for example, I have done crazy things with my youth orchestra time. For example, I asked them to stand and dance that passage. That could be it's really breaking out of their shell, feeling a music. Mm-hmm. Or I, you know, in Taiwan, the summer festival, now I lead, has a youth orchestra program. I have basically taught everybody basic conducting patterns. So everybody has to conduct mm-hmm. and sing. That's how you can master sort of the musical intent you're trying to create with your instrument. And so a magical moment could be storytelling, mm-hmm. you know, really sort of put people's mind in terms of a story. I mean, this moment could be, you know, a sun rising on a cold winter night, you know, just giving images. And so I think it depends on the situation. I think, you know, the professional orchestra is less likely to share with your enthusiasm in storytelling, but the youth orchestra, definitely. Mm. That's a different way of communicating.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of your teachers. You mentioned Ken Kiesler, and you've talked about Robert Spano a couple times. Who are all your teachers? And then a couple of lessons that have really stuck with you.
You know, I will just pull from various teachers. I have so many to be thankful for. You know, I had a wonderful violin teacher, Eric Rosenblith. And I was doing double master's degree at NEC, which was like the first person to have done it in both conducting a violin. So I was practicing maybe 3.5 days and then doing conducting in the other half of the week. And I would come into my violin lesson and he would say, well, man, I know you're very busy and you learned this very quickly, but what are you trying to say with your music?
Yeah.
And I think that has always stuck with me, even as a conductor. What are you trying to say with this passage, with this Dvorak, with this Beethoven? You know, obviously, we can't call them up and ask them directly, but we have to come up with our own interpretation. So that has always stayed with me. And my dear first violin teacher, who was so tolerant of teaching me English, Mary Lou Speaker Churchill, who was the longtime second violin of the Boston Symphony. I mean, it's interesting how we all come to a problematic spot. I mean, in rehearsal, as a conductor too, you know the orchestra is struggling, you know you have to get that transition. And our first instinct is always just do it over, you know, sort of the drill master in us. And I will always remember Mary Lou saying, man, love it more. Hmm. When it's difficult, you got to love it more. And so it's really approaching it a different way. And so I've used really fun examples in rehearsals. Some of my orchestras always laugh at me when I say as sharp as sushi knife. You know, I will always rehearse the ending. You know, don't just take it for granted, but to get the sound that's really crisp sounding in that hole. I use fun examples like that. Then there are other, you know, incredible mentors. Mr. B, Frank Battisti, who is very important in wind ensemble literature and was literally my first conducting teacher. His approach to rehearsal, respect for the players, that have always stuck with me. I mean, he will have rehearsal written out from, you know, for example, 9:30 to 9:43. That's on the first piece. I mean, he is just such an organizer. And yeah. So that I have found that really helpful when I have one rehearsal to put together a young person's concert program. Really be able to stay on top of my timing. I have wonderful mentor in Marin Alsop, who has done so much for women conductors that I don't know another person on the planet has done more than she has. And Marin is just a wonderful inspiration in terms of she inspired me to really work on public speaking. Just be able to talk about the music you championed and to be creative. I mean, she's so creative with incredible ideas, just anything. You know, when she started the Baltimore tenure, that she invited, she created opportunities for the people who built the hall to come and be part of, you know, the celebration. I mean, how creative is that, you know, to really include people that's outside of your normal base. Donald Ronicles with the Atlanta Symphony, who conducts the orchestra, almost imagining you have lungs on your arms. I mean, the singers love working with Donald because he understands when the phrases needs to breathe. And you know, he conducts with left hand, was, you know, very curious for me to see. And, you know, he actually puts the orchestra in certain mindset. And I find a very interesting way of rehearsing the orchestra, much more European. And so it's I learned so much from all these mentors. Each one of them, you know, Robert Spano has created the theater of a concert concept with Atlanta Symphony. For those of you who don't know about this, just Google Atlanta Symphony, for example, Haydn. Creation, you know, I had to cue the broken triangles, which were also parts of the screens. But it's just incredible things that they were able to create. Dr. Atomic, for example, theater of a concert, really bringing extra theatrical elements into your concert production. I learned it from Robert more than anybody else. It's just incredible to be able to think outside your box and to make your art form more relevant to more people. Some people are very visual, like my sister, who's a visual artist, always think coming into a concert hall, sitting down for 2 hours is kind of boring experience. And so I think the theater of a concert is totally like, you know, her thing. So I will encourage all the young conductors to think outside the box. Yes, of course, know your Beethoven, know your Tchaikovsky, you know, which is very, a lot of repertoire, standard repertoire, you got to know it at the back of your hand. You have to know Beethoven 5.
Oh, yeah.
so well that, you know, that it will make or break your career. However, there's so many conductors conducting those standard repertoire mm-hmm. before that. Yes. What can stand you apart from others could be the repertoire that's unique to you. So champion conductors that is unknown, that is contemporary, that is composers of color, woman composers, anything that you know, you have to find it, what your heart is passionate. I can't tell you what you like. You have to find it and find a niche of creating something that's unique.
So what repertoire do you champion? How do you program your concerts?
So at Chicago Sinfonietta, was always well known for not only championing for diversity, equity, and inclusion, but also very innovative programmings because they play in the same hall as the Chicago Symphony. So you might remember, I remember as a young conductor thinking, which crazy orchestra is this? 2006 on the front page of New York Times for the art section, there was a orchestra that commissioned a concertino for cell phone and orchestra. concertino for cell phone and orchestra. And this is before cell phone became household items. And I remember thinking to myself, whoa, that orchestra is pretty brave. Not knowing years later, I will be at the helm of this orchestra creating crazy programs. Because Sinfonietas has always done things outside the box, if you thought it, we probably have done it. So, you know, I'm happy to share. Maybe I'll send you a link that you can share with your listeners, sort of a minute of our crazy projects during my tenure. For example, a world-class tap dancer dancing to Firebird Suite by Stravinsky. Jumping off the stage at the end of, you know, his portion. We have done live painting to live music. We have done unusual instruments. We have done various type of dance with standard repertoire. I mean, you name it, we probably have done. And so it's the Sinfonietta's programming, you can say it's fun, but also super challenging because everyone has to be sort of its own narrative and it has to jump off the page like a Sinfonietta concert. So, for example, we did a collaboration with Muka Paza, a 30-piece mismatch marching band in Chicago that has a huge following. I lost two nights of sleep trying to program with them. I almost quit my job over because I'm a classically trained conductor. What do I do with a marching band in a concert hall? So I'm proud to say we come up with a project that has won us the MacArthur Genius Grant.
Oh, yeah.
We became the first orchestra to have won that. We created a concert version, first half, taking music that's connected to bands, you know, such as English Folk Song Suite by Vaughan Williams, Britain Young Person's Guy setting up, you know, each section battle of the bands idea. Second half, we take the band's music and made orchestra arrangement. Mm-hmm. And my dream come true when I was sitting in Chicago Symphony's performance, I was dreaming about how could we make the concert experience more theatrical. And so my dream came true. 15 members of the band signed up to be lifted up in the piano lift as we started the music. And people were like, we hear the band, but where are they? And when people see the sousaphone coming out of the piano lift, it was like a rock concert. It was not a classical concert anymore. Then we did the second piece of their music had a klezmer feel to it. So I link it to one of the most well-known symphony that has klezmer music Mahler Symphony number one. Right? And so, you know, when we met with Mukapatsa, they said, man, we have cheerleaders. And you can imagine my face. What do I do with the cheerleaders? So they came out and did a cheer leading into Mahler one. It was the most entertaining. Then the final piece, 1812 by Tchaikovsky. So Mukapatsa orchestrated their entrance from various entrance in the hall as the invading French, and the orchestra as the Russia protecting its motherland. And so at one point, they even had cheerleaders coming out on the choir loft holding baguettes. You know, they ran out of food and lost the battle. At the very end of the piece, Mukapatsa literally died on stage. The orchestra was the victor of the battle. And so my musicians was so fun. After the first performance, they came to me and said, man, could we march out as the victors after the Mukapatsa band? I said, of course, feel free. And so we had also purchased 11 shots of confetti cannons. So we have no splee sections in orchestra hall, and we save 2 shots aiming for the right angle, and then 11 shots, you know, for the performance. And it was to die for, that moment of audience trying to grab onto those long confetti. And with the lighting, you have to see it to believe it. And my wonderful team have come up with Battle of the Beers for before the concert, during intermission, and after the concert. You know, if we get them drunk, they're more likely to join the orchestra. And so anyway, so that's an example of Chicago Sinfonietta's crazy programming. Now, what I have found that's really interesting, that has become sort of a part of trademark for my career, is championing for women composers. We have created Project W as a way to celebrate our 30th anniversary, because the baton passing concert, when Maestro Freeman passed his baton to me, was a program all by women composers. Oh, so wow. We take that one step further of honoring, you know, his legacy, and to really create a disc with our wonderful partner SETI Records to capture 5 works by women composers, among the 9 total works that we feature over the season. We were, by percentage, we were number 1 in the country. By number, we were only number 2 after Los Angeles Philharmonic. We have 10 works out of their 200 some works.
Yeah.
We have 9 out of 22, you know. And so it was a big year for us to champion for women composers. Project W, we feature the first African-American woman whose work being premiered by a major orchestra, whose name is Florence Beatrice Price. Who was originally from Little Rock, Arkansas, and made her home in Chicago from 1927 all the way until the end of her life in the 50s. And she won the Chicago Symphonies competition, and when they premiered her symphony in E minor in 33, she became the first African-American woman in the country whose work was received such a big exposure. And so we have on the disc Project W of her charming dances in the Cambrics, because I think it's easier for orchestra who doesn't know her to program short pieces as a way to introduce her to the audience. And this is orchestrated by her childhood friend, William Grant Still, who is much well known, considered the dean of African American composers. They were both from Little Rock, Arkansas, but you know, when Florence Price at the end of her life, this is 1953, when she wrote these three dances using indigenous African rhythms for piano, I think she was too ill to orchestrate herself. She's a wonderful orchestrator, you know, as you can hear from her Mississippi Suite and her symphonies. But she asked William Grant Still to orchestrate for her. So that's on our Project W as, you know, the first captured dances in the Cambrics that almost nobody else has programmed, but I have championed it all over, even brought it to Sweden and Austria. Now, we also have Clarice Assad, the daughter of the Assad brothers, and Clarice literally studied in Chicago, went away to New York, other places, grew up in South America as well, but now has called Chicago home. And so her wonderful work written for us was really pulling, and I think all her works is pulling from her two Americas, you know, her South America and North America musical influences. Mm-hmm. And Jessie Montgomery, really, if you don't know her name, you should, because almost every orchestra is trying to program something by her since the Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter movement takes off. Mm-hmm. Jessie Montgomery was from New York and really able to bring to her music this, I think, just wonderful fusion of all kinds of music. Really exposed to her in New York growing up, Lower East Side, I think, and really be able to use her string background. She is a very accomplished violinist of the Catalyst Quartet. And so, you know, her piece of strum written for strings, also Starburst, is literally hitting the orchestra radar. You can, you know, Google Starburst and you will see a Minnesota recent streaming online through Facebook on her piece of Starburst. Mm-hmm. Really wonderful, very rhythmic and very creative mind of Jessie Montgomery. Also on the disc, very well-known Jennifer Higdon, a dear friend I got to know from my tenure in Atlanta Symphony. I assisted her in the recording with Jenny Cole, the Singing Room with Atlanta Symphony and Atlanta Symphony Chorus. We recorded her dance card because that was we were just lucky to be able to catch the co-commission, since I also did the Houston premiere with River Oak Chamber Orchestra. And the dance card for strings is just five individual wonderful movements that can be created in any combination of a suite or individual movements. And I think it's some of Jennifer's best work in terms of just the sublime beauty of the slow movement and the wonderful rhythmic driving fast movements. I highly recommend people, especially in this COVID time, if you need to do something smaller, like reduced version, strings only, Jennifer's dance card is it for a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I would like to mention, yes, one more wonderful composers from Project W before I mention the ones that didn't make it on Project W. Rena Esmail, who grew up in Los Angeles and now still also based in Los Angeles. Wonderful composer in terms of the first in being able to fuse Hindu or traditional Indian music with Western music. The piece she wrote for us was right when Me Too movement was really at its peak, and she was writing something else, but she approached us and said, is it okay that she changed the title to Me Too? And we said, by all means. Mm-hmm. And it's this wonderful raga that she also sung on the disc that made it into us the materials for her Me Too for us. And I find her music incredibly exalted and interesting because it puts me in a different world. You have to be able to cross over to this, you know, raga and tala. This is very different world. You know, this is all oral tradition. It's not written down. And in terms of, you know, their it's a different world in terms of, you know, their pitch sometimes is bending because there are three portions to a pitch and you have to sort of hit it just right. And it's completely different than what we think of Western music. And so I love Rina's music anytime, you know, I premiere her Tim Murthy also for strings. And the musicians find it incredibly challenging and fun because the mixed meter is harder than Rite of Spring. I can only explain. I mean, I literally show her score to the audience when we did it in Chicago. It was just kind of a different experience for us. Now, one more woman composer for young conductors out there. I've discovered a wonderful woman composer who's just literally forgotten in history. The first symphonic composer for Croatia. Her name is Dora Pejacevic. Let me spell for you. Dora Pejacevic. Pejacevic. Now, she lived very short lives, but, you know, she lived in a very interesting time. When her music, you can hear a glimpse of Bruckner, of Strauss, of, you know, the tone poem, definitely so evident in terms of, you know, I believe she studied with the same teacher as Strauss. And, you know, in her F sharp minor symphony in F sharp minor, she even asked for augmented brass, almost like Wagnerian. I mean, who does like, you know, five horns and four trumpets, you know? No, I'm wrong. I think it's like six horns, four trumpets, even larger than the previous movements. And so, you know, this is really fun if you want to dive into things you don't know. It's really, really wonderful composer. She died actually of giving a year after giving birth to her son. And so it's really unfortunate that we don't have any, you know, more works from her. But she was already very prolific. Another unknown composer I highly recommend the young composers, as I have championed some of his work. Joachim Raff, R-A-F-F. Contemporary of Brahms, a Swiss-German composer that was really sort of a prodigy of Liszt. And he has created sort of the Four Seasons Symphony, Symphony number 8 to 11. I've done the summer, and you just have to listen to it because I think it's just hidden gems. You know, it's not Brahms, but it's, you can tell it's the same period.
Yeah.
And it has wonderful sparkling quality to it. He was one of the most well-known German composers when he died, but now has been sort of forgotten. I've literally have to bring it back to the repertoire in Austria, in my orchestra in Austria. They were surprised that I brought them sort of their own composers that they have forgotten.
He did a overture on Ein Festeberg, right?
I think so.
I did that with the Mendelssohn Reformation Symphony. So I'm familiar with that.
Good for you. Wonderful. Another composer I've fallen in love, and I've just I would just, it's sort of saved me from my pandemic anxiety is Piazzolla. I've just been digging into Piazzolla's the Tango Opera. It's just incredible. It makes me forget about all the troubles in the world. And so I highly recommend, if you don't know Piazzolla, I mean, there's not a whole lot of orchestra works he has done, but there's definitely arrangements. You know, the one I have enjoyed so much is with the Royal Concertgebouw, a brass ensemble. They have definitely made an interesting arrangement from it. And I'll just say, you know, dig into Piazzolla.
Yeah.
You might love it.
Perfect. Well, man, thank you so much for this chat today. Is there any final advice you'd like to send everybody off with?
You know, I would just like to say, being a conductor at this time particularly, you got to love what you do.
Yeah.
Meaning you got to love being a champion for the art form in every way, and sometimes being unusual ways of being, thinking outside the box and being online and finding interesting way to create your own ensembles in this very challenging COVID time. But also your passion will take you far, because I think you got to want it so bad. So many young conductors come to us and we try to say, look, you have the talent to make it. You got to trust us. But they didn't believe it at first. And so find an angel in your life that believes in you, like many of my mentors did. You know, for Robert Spano to say to me, man, you got to come to Atlanta because, you know, America needs your kind of conductor. I mean, I was in tears. Find your angel that believes your gifts, and then really hold on to that through up and down times, because I can promise you there will be down times more than up times. And you will wonder, am I in the right journey? And I can assure you, if you don't have enough passion and have enough angels in your life, that you won't be able to pull through all the down loops that we will experience. But if you are passionate enough and really find a way to create opportunities, you know, I also have to, with 14 engagements canceled out of 22, as I told you, my yearly average, I also have to find other ways. You know, I created without even knowing how to do PowerPoint, I actually create a 2-hour curriculum teaching conducting patterns, following symphonic dances, a passage for mixed meter, how to do 4 against 3, and even, you know, other fun trivial questions all in one presentation. And I have used it at several colleges, the Brown University, USC, University of Houston. And so find ways to create things. I have to thank Carnegie's NYO2, because I literally created for the students who could not meet in person. And so that led me to explore creating this program, and I'm going to create another one to follow this up. And so I encourage all of you out there to think outside the box, and you are not alone in terms of we're all going through this together. But if you can, you know, use your energy to create something unique, you will survive and thrive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Again, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for leading Chicago Sinfonietta with these fantastic programs and the great project inclusion. Again, we're raising money for that today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for inviting Chicago Sinfonietta and for raising funds for our Project Inclusion Freeman Fellowship. Thank you so much, Jeremy.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of Podium Time. You can find everything in the show notes below, and please reach out if you have any suggestions for guests or improvements to the podcast. We're always striving to make Podium Time the best podcast that we can for you conductors and students, so send us a Facebook message or use the contact page on our website with any suggestions you may have. Thanks so much for listening to this episode, and we'll see you next time. Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony was performed by the Czech National Symphony Orchestra, and Beethoven's Egmont Overture was performed by Stefano Liguorati.